Even as Matt was visiting with Andrew Marcus, Pogue Willis and Billy Meacham were riding into town. Their attention was drawn to a group of people standing in front of a store identified by the red painted sign on the false front as Sykes Hardware Store. The people appeared to be looking at something that was in the front window.
There are people standing in front of a store over there. What is it do you reckon they're looking at?
I don't know. Why don't we just ride over that way and take a look?
Willis and Meacham steered their horses across the street and stopped just behind the people who were gathered in front of the store. What they saw was three coffins, the bottom halves of which were closed, the upper halves open. The coffins, thus arrayed, displayed the bodies of Bert Philbin, Dearmont Cantrell, and Abe Oliver. All three men were wearing jackets and ties, though Meacham knew for a fact that none of them owned a jacket or a tie, and he was almost certain that none of them had ever even worn a jacket or tie. Instead of the pallor of death, the three men showed color in their faces. In fact, it was far too much color, very obviously artificially applied by the undertaker.
Damn! It's Bert, Dearmont, and Abe.
I can see that! And if I couldn't, that damn sign there would tell me.
The sign Willis spoke of was painted on a square board that was standing on a tripod alongside the three coffins.
Bert Philbin, Dearmont Oliver, Andy Cantrell. Robbers beware, these three outlaws were killed by Mac Jensen when they tried to hold up the Sun Valley stage. Damn, look at that! They got his names all wrong. They got Cantrell and Oliver's names all mixed up. And it's Abe, not Andy. We ought to do something.
Do something? What do you mean, do something?
What? That! We ought to at least tell them they got the names wrong.
Right. And while you're at it, you can tell them that we was in on the same robbery.
What? Well, no, we wouldn't do anything like that. Oh, yeah. I guess I see what you mean. But it don't seem right that they got the names all wrong.
What difference does it make whether they got the names wrong or not? They're dead. And if you get the names right, they ain't gonna be any less dead, are they?
No, I don't reckon they'll be any less dead.
Then why don't you quit worrying about it and let's go get us a beer?
Willis and Meacham went to the Dry Gulch Saloon, needing to quench the thirst of the road.
Beer.
The same.
The bartender drew two mugs of beer, then sat them in front of Willis and Meacham.
I think you're like this beer. It's made local.
What do you mean, made local?
Why, we got us a beer man right in this town. Master Brewer come here from St. Louis. You won't get any better beer anywhere in the country than this.
Beer is beer.
You boys just riding through?
Hey, whatever.
Well, the reason I asked, you might not know about some of the excitement going on.
What excitement?
Stagecoach robbery excitement. Well, that is, some fellas tried to rob the stagecoach, only all they got for it was killed.
Yes, we saw the bodies in the front of the hardware store. Did the folks in this town put every dead body you got on display like that?
No, nothing like that. But you can't blame Mr. Prufrock none. You see, he has his undertaking business in the back of the Sykes Hardware Store. Well, Mr. Sykes, he rents the space out, and these three galoots, being outlaws and all, don't have nobody paying to bury him except the town. So Prufrock puts them on display like that to advertise his business.
Tell me, what was them fellas looking to get by robbing the stagecoach? But was the coach really carrying money?
I reckon the passengers was carrying money. Don't know if the coach was.
It was carrying some money, but it wasn't carrying near as much as it'll be carrying next week.
Willis looked toward the man who had just spoken.
Oh, why do you say that?
Because there's a fella in town now by the name of Bixby. J. Peerless Bixby. You ever hear of him?
I can't say that I have.
Well, he's one rich son of a bitch from what I hear.
Bartender, I see my friend here's mug is empty. Give him another beer.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. There you go, Mr. Decker.
Why, thank you, Mr.
Tell me more about this man, J. Peerless Bixby.
Oh, he's a rich one, all right. He's come out here to buy ranch land. They say he wants to own the biggest ranch in the entire territory. Anyway, to do that, he's going to have a lot of money transferred.
How much money is a lot of money?
A lot. In fact, some folks say it'll be as much as maybe $50,000. And it'll be coming into town by stagecoach.
When?
Next week sometime, from what I hear. You seem uncommon interested in all this.
Maybe I'm planning to hold up the stagecoach.
Yeah? Well, if you do, I hope you have better luck than them three boys that just tried it.
They was just particularly unlucky is all. They happened to try to rob the particular coach Matt Jensen was riding on.
You got that right. I know there was only one of him and three of the robbers.
Five, if you count the two that got away.
Yeah, five then, but here's the point I was getting at. There was five stagecoach robbers and only one of Matt Jensen, which means the robbers was outnumbered. Don't you get it? There's only one of Matt Jensen, and there's three, maybe more of the robbers, but I said they was outnumbered. Because he's so good.
Yeah, I get it now.
So you see, friend, if you really are planning on holding up the coach, you might want to think about it again, lest you run into this here Jensen fella.
There you go, friend. You just talked me right out of it.
When the Dry Gulch closed its doors for the night, Willis and Meacham, not having enough money to waste on a hotel room, rode just outside of town where they bedded down in an arroyo beneath the huge, dark slab of the McDowell Mountains.
We gonna try to rob that stagecoach, are we, Willis?
No, I don't think so.
Good, because to tell you the truth, I wasn't looking forward to something like that again. I think waiting till the money gets here, then robbing the bank that it's put into, will be a lot better.
We ain't gonna do that either.
What do you mean we ain't gonna do that? Ain't that what we come here for?
We came here to get money the best way we can. We'll just wait around until this here Bixby fella takes the money out of the bank. It'll be a lot easier taking the money from him than it would be robbing the bank.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean.
So, all we gotta do is spend a week or so here without getting into any kind of trouble.
The next morning, the sun was a quarter of the way up in the east as the wagon lumbered along the road.
Dewey, did you grease that right rear wheel like I told you?
Yes, sir, Mr. Malcolm. I done greased it just like you said.
You hear that?
Yes, sir, I hear it.
Which sure as hell don't sound like you greased it now, does it? If that axle is worn flat when we get back, I'm going to be taking it out of your pay to buy a new one.
Well, I done it just like you told me.
They drove on for a few more minutes, then Malcolm tensed.
Get out of the wagon, boy.
What?
Malcolm reached for the shotgun that lay in the floor beneath his feet.
Get out of the wagon and run. Find yourself a place to hide. I've just seen some engines, and I don't think they're friendly.
Mr. Malcolm, I can't leave.
Damn it to hell, boy. I said get out of the wagon. I don't intend to be worrying none about no snot-nosed boy.
All right.
Now jump out of here, then go down the side of the hill and head north. When you reach the Salt River, turn left. It'll take you to Phoenix. It's about 8 miles. You can make it. Here, take the canteen.
But there's only one canteen.
You'll be needing it more than me. Now, do what I told you.
Yes, sir. Dang!
Malcolm looked back just long enough to see Dewey get out of sight. Then he picked up the double-barrel shotgun and held it across his lap. When he came around the curve, he saw four Indians in the road in front of him.
White man, what do you have in the wagon?
What I have in this here wagon ain't none of your business. Now get out of my way if you don't want to get gunshot.
I think that if you give us some of what you have in the wagon, we will let you pass.
To hell with that!
A heavy blast opened up one Indian's chest and he fell from his horse. At the very moment young Dewey Calhoun was running for his life, Ken Hendel was sitting in the lobby of the Phoenix House Hotel reading the Arizona Gazette. He was reading an article about the recent string of Indian massacres that have been taking place around the territory.
Ah, there you are, Hendel. Have you located the conveyance?
Yes, Mr. Bixby. The Sundown Corral will provide a buckboard and team for $1.50.
$1.50? Did you tell them I will only be using it for half a day?
Yes, sir, I did. Otherwise, it would have been $3.
Why, that is an outrage, an absolute outrage. Could you find nothing less expensive?
I shopped around. That was the best offer I could find.
Very well. If that is the absolute best offer, then it will have to do. I do resent, however, that they are taking advantage of me because I am a visitor to this desolate place.
I believe that is the price they charge everyone.
Of course, you would believe that. You're very good with numbers, Hendel, but you are very naive when it comes to business.
If you say so, Mr. Bixby.
Yes, well, Cynthia and I will be taking our lunch now. We'll leave first thing this afternoon. If Dan Conway shows up at the hotel looking for me, tell him I will meet him tomorrow morning.
I thought Mr. Conway was going with you.
I decided I would rather look at the land myself first. I don't want Conway trying to influence me.
Oh, Mr. Bixby, I don't know if that is such a good idea.
What do you mean?
I mean, it may not be wise for you and Mrs. Bixby to go out on your own. I'm not sure it's all that safe.
Don't be ridiculous. Safe from what?
Indians.
Indians? Where did you get such an idea?
Hendel showed Bixby the newspapers he had been reading. Bixby looked at it for a moment, then handed it back.
Stuff and nonsense. That's just a story to sell newspapers. Obviously, it's some fool Indian who's gone off on his own. It isn't as if there's an Indian war going on.
Still, I would feel better if you had someone local with you. Someone who knows the geography and can keep you out of trouble.
You don't worry about me. I will be just fine. What I want you to do is make certain the transfer of funds between my bank and the local bank is going through all right.
Yes, sir.
Looking toward the stairs, Hendel saw Cynthia coming down into the lobby, and he stood quickly.
Good morning, Mrs. Bixby. My, what a pretty green dress you are wearing.
Why, thank you very much for noticing, Mr. Hendel. Isn't it a lovely day today?
Yes, it is indeed.
Jay and I are going to take our breakfast now. Won't you join us?
Hendel doesn't have time to join us. I have given him a task to perform, and it must be taken care of promptly.
I'm afraid Mr. Bixby is correct. I do have a task to perform that may keep me busy for the rest of the day.
Oh, such a shame. Perhaps you can take your lunch with us when we return.
I shall endeavor to do so.
For crying out loud, Cynthia, you aren't arranging a social. We're out here on business, and Hendel is an employee, not a personal friend.
On the contrary, Jay, Mr. Hendel has been a close personal friend for more years than I have ever known you.
Nevertheless, he is a mere employee, and I do wish you would remember to keep things at that level. Now, come. We can't tarry here all day.
At the other end of town, Sheriff Williams sat at the desk in his office processing the papers that had authorized payment of the bounty for the three would-be stagecoach robbers.
$1,500.
What?
Norman Keith was serving 3 days for public drunkenness. It wasn't the sheriff's policy to arrest everyone who got drunk, but Keith had a habit of getting drunk and urinating in public, thus becoming a regular in the Phoenix jail.
I said $1,500. That's how much bounty we just paid to Pinky's widow and that Jensen fella for killing the three stagecoach robbers. It's a lot of money.
I agree. $1,500 is a lot of money. But consider this, Sheriff. When one engages armed robbers to earn it, one should certainly be allowed to keep the fruits of such a hazardous enterprise.
I don't know. I have to do that, the hazardous enterprise you were talking about, all the time, just because it's my job. And I only get $30 a month for doing it. Suppose I could always quit being a sheriff and become a bounty hunter. What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at the notion of you being a bounty hunter. Come on, Bob. Could you see your wife letting you do that? You aren't a bounty hunter, you're a sheriff. And I'll admit that you are a pretty good sheriff. And that's all you will ever be.
Oh my. I'm coming from the town drunk. I reckon I should be all worried about that.
Yeah, well, I guess you got me there. Only, just remember, I haven't always been a drunk.
Norman Keith was right. He hadn't always been a drunk. At one time, he was an English professor at Tempe Normal, but a fire in his campus home had taken the life of his wife and two small children. Unable to cope with the grief, Keith had abandoned academia and begun drinking. At the Sundown Corral and Equipage Company, Ken Hendel stood waiting beside the rig he had rented for J. Peerless Bixby. When he saw them coming up the street from the restaurant, he stepped out to meet them.
I have the buckboard here for you, Mr. Bixby.
Were you able to talk them down anymore?
No, sir. It cost us $1.50.
Very well. If we have to pay it, we have to pay it.
Without regard to Cynthia, Bixby climbed into the buckboard. Hendel offered his hand to help Cynthia into her seat.
Thank you, Mr. Hendel.
Have you made the arrangements with the bank yet?
I was there this morning. They are expecting the transfer of money on today's stagecoach.
Well, stay on it.
Yes, sir.
It was nearly noon when a bedraggled and exhausted Dewey Calhoun pushed open the door of the sheriff's office.
Sheriff Williams! Sheriff Williams!
I'm Sheriff Williams. What can I do for you?
It's Injuns. It's Injuns, Sheriff. I think they killed Mr. Malcolm.
Are you talking about Pete Malcolm? The man that runs a freight service out of Picket Post?
Yes, sir, that's the one I'm talking about.
You know him, Keith?
Yes. You know him too, Bob. He's the one that hauled in most of the material that was used to build the college.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
He's a good man.
Yes, sir, he was a good man. More likely got himself killed saving me.
You say it was the engines that killed him? Where'd this happen?
It was on the Picket Post Road. Me and Mr. Malcolm, we was bringing a load of saltpeter to the Maricopa Chemical Company when the Apaches attacked us.
Saltpeter?
Yes, sir.
Damn, that isn't good. You put saltpeter with sulfur and charcoal and you can make gunpowder.
Well, I doubt the Indians have enough sense to know how to use it.
Don't be selling the Indians short, Bob. I've known some that were very intelligent. What's your name, boy?
Dewey Calhoun.
How did you get away, Dewey?
Mr. Malcolm, he seen the Apaches before they attacked, and he gave me the canteen, told me to run. That's what I done. That's how I come I'm here.
How do you know Pete is dead? Did you see the Indians kill him?
No, sir, I didn't actually see it, but I heard it.
What do you mean you heard it?
I heard Mr. Malcolm's shotgun go off, then I heard a lot more shots after that.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good sign he was killed, all right.
Williams walked over to take his hat off a hook. He also took down the ring of keys, then came back to open the door to Keith's cell.
You weren't supposed to be let out till after lunch, but I may not be back by then, so I'm letting you out now. And next time you have to take a pee, for heaven's sake, Keith, go out in the alley or some such place.
I always do, when I'm sober. And I thank you for your kindness in letting me out half an hour early.
Yeah, well, it also saves the county the money of buying you lunch. Dewey, come with me. We'll go find Marshal Gilmore. This is more his jurisdiction than it is mine.
Could you give me a drink of water first? I drank up all the canteen while I was walking here.
Sure you can, boy. There's a bucket and a dipper right there against the wall.
Sheriff Williams found U.S. Marshal Gilmore having his lunch in Miller's Cafe.
Marshal, this here is Dewey Calhoun. He came into the office a little while ago telling a story about being attacked by engines. And seeing as dealing with engines is more a federal thing than county, I figure we should more than likely bring you in on it.
Where did this happen?
Out on the Picket Post Road.
He was on a wagon, Marshal, and get this, the wagon was carrying saltpeter. You know what that's used for, don't you?
Yeah, I know.
It's used for making gunpowder.
Have you had your lunch, boy?
No, sir. It got left back on the wagon.
Faye, bring the boy your blue plate lunch special. Now, boy, tell me all about it.
The rig Bixby rented had been on the trail for the better part of the morning. The day had started out warm and was now hot. As the steel-rimmed wheels rolled across the hard-packed earth, they picked up dirt, causing a rooster tail of dust to stream out behind them. The wood of the buckboard was bleached white, and under the sun it gave off a rather pungent smell. As Bixby drove the team, Cynthia sat in the sun on the dried seat of the wagon, looking at the map Bixby had given her.
You see anything familiar?
That obelisk over there has to be Weaver's Needle, and if it is, then we are right here.
Why, this? This is nothing more than desert. I was led to believe I would be buying land that could easily be made into a ranch. How can one make a ranch of desert land? Are you certain of where we are?
You can look at the map. Perhaps you will read it differently.
No, you're right. This is the property I was to buy. But no more. I will not be bamboozled. As soon as we return to Phoenix, I will stop the sale and we will return to New York.
Suddenly, the buckboard lurched so badly that Cynthia was very nearly tossed out.
Whoa, horses!
What was that?
The team stopped and the buckboard sat there listening sharply to the right.
Jay, what is it? What is wrong?
Oh, this is just too much. I believe we've broken an axle.
Can you fix it?
Now, how can I fix it? What do you take me for, a common tradesman? Oh, to provide customers with a conveyance that breaks down on you the first time you take it out is unconscionable.
Cynthia climbed down from the listing buckboard.
Don't tell me you think you can fix it.
No, I can't fix it, but we can't just stay here.
What do you propose that we do?
I think we should start walking back.
Walking? Walking where? All the way back to Phoenix?
If necessary, yes, all the way to Phoenix. But I believe Mr. Hendel will notice the lateness of our return and will arrange for someone to come and collect us.
You have more confidence in him than I do. I doubt seriously that he will have the presence of mind to notice we are late.
You underestimate Mr. Hendel. I find him to be a very clever person. He is also very loyal and dependable.
No doubt you should have married him rather than me.
What was that?
What was what?
That sound. Didn't you hear it?
I haven't heard anything. What do you think you heard?
I don't know. It sounded like several pops. rather like the sound popcorn makes when it is popping.
Your imagination is working overtime. Perhaps you are hearing the mountain god. What did Hendel say the Indians called him?
Usen.
Usen, yes. Perhaps Usen is popping corn.
Why, Jay, you do have a sense of humor. I am surprised.
I meant it as sarcasm, my dear, not as humor. Oh, why did I ever think I might want to live out here?
But all you have to do is look around to answer that question. Why, I think it is beautiful out here. See the way the sun plays upon the mountains? And look at all the different colors it displays. It is magnificent.
Only a fool could see beauty in this wild, trackless land.
Suddenly, over a ridge just before them, 10 Indians appeared. The Indians drew back quickly, as surprised to see Bixby and Cynthia as they were to see the Indians.
Oh my God! Indians!
Del Shea held up his hand to stop the others, and for a long moment, the 10 Indians just sat their mounts, looking at the strange sight of a white man and a white woman walking along the road all alone. Neither Del Shea nor any of his men made a sound.
Please, please don't kill me! Don't kill me!
Putting his hands on Cynthia's shoulders, Bixby shoved her forward.
Take her! Do you see how beautiful she is? I know that Indians like white women. Take her! I give her to you!
Jay, what are you doing?
White man, would you give your woman to us to spare your life?
Yes, yes, you can have her. I give her to you.
Del Shea pointed to the west.
Go. I will not kill you.
Thank you. Thank you. Cynthia, I am sorry.
Bixby started walking west, but the walk quickly turned into a run as he hurried to get away from them before the leader of the Indians changed his mind. Cynthia watched Bixby leave, and she turned to look into the face of the leader. Perhaps it was shock, the shock of the attack, of seeing Bixby dissolve in panic, or of realizing that he had just traded her life for his. Whatever it was, it took away all her own fear.
I claim this woman as mine.
No. She will not be anyone's woman. She is a woman with powerful medicine. We will honor that medicine.
She has no medicine.
She has not shown fear.
She will show fear of me.
No, I think not. I think Mountain Lion Woman is without fear in her eyes.
Mountain Lion Woman? You have given this white woman a name?
Yes.
I do not believe her medicine is strong enough for you to give her such a name. I will prove to you that she fears me. Then I will claim her as my woman.
She will show no fear.
Now Yudi raised his war club.
Ah!
Cynthia was resigned to dying now, thinking that it might even be preferable to being a prisoner of the Indians. Because of that, the strange, almost numbing calmness that had come over her before was still present. She showed no fear.
Now Yudi, do you agree now that her medicine is strong?
Nalyudi turned away from her.
Come, you will not be harmed.
What is your name?
It is not the way of the Apache to give their name to everyone. We give our name only to trusted friends and respected enemies. But I will tell you that my name is Del Shea.
Del Shea, I thank you for not killing my husband.
You are a strange woman. You thank me for not killing your husband, but you do not thank me for not killing you.
I do not thank you because my life is still in your hands.
You are a wise woman, but do not thank me for letting your man live. Though he lives today, your man is a coward, and he will die many times.
Cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never taste of death but once.
You know of this, Mountain Lion Woman?
Yes. It is something Shakespeare said.
Your friend Shakespeare is a wise man.
A couple of the Indians took Cynthia gently and led her to a horse, then helped her to mount. Although none of the horses the Indians were riding had a saddle, this was one of 6 horses that were saddled, and she wondered where they came from and how the Indians happened to have them. As she mounted, she saw the angry look that the one Del Shea had called Nalyudi was giving her. What she did not realize was that her action had caused Nalyudi to lose face before the other warriors, and she did not realize what a mortal enemy she had just made. Matt Jensen found himself sitting in a small saloon enjoying the pleasures of a fine whiskey when the sheriff walked in.
Matt?
Yes, Sheriff?
I wonder if you would mind coming down the office with me. Marshal Gilmore and I have a favor to ask you.
Be glad to.
Matt followed the sheriff down to his office. There, he was introduced to Marshal Gilmore and a boy of about 12 who was identified as Dewey Calhoun.
Mr. Jensen, are you the same Matt Jensen who rode scout for General Crook several months back?
Yes.
Good. I was hoping you were. We got a little situation here that I'm hoping you can help with.
I'll be glad to do what I can.
Son, tell Mr. Jensen what you told us.
Dewey repeated his story of being out on the picket post road when they encountered Indians. He concluded by telling of hearing the gunfire.
Did you go back to see whether or not Malcolm was dead or alive?
Oh, no, sir. I should have, shouldn't I? I'm sorry. It's just I was so scared.
Don't be sorry. More than likely, he wasn't alive, and it wouldn't have done him any good if he'd gone back. In fact, might have just put you in more danger.
Mr. Jensen, I was wondering if you'd let me deputize you while we go out to look for Malcolm.
No need to deputize me. I'll just go with you as a private citizen.
Sheriff! Sheriff!
Hello, Mr. Hendel.
Mr. Jensen, I am so very glad to see you here.
You know this fella, do you, Jensen?
Yes, we came out together on the train and then on the coach. He works for Mr. Bixby.
Oh, yeah. The man is going to own the biggest ranch in Arizona.
What brings you to the sheriff's office, Mr. Hendel?
It's Mrs. Bixby. Of course, I mean Mr. and Mrs. Bixby.
What about them?
They are missing. They rode out just after breakfast. I was certain they would be back by now, but they still haven't returned.
Rode out? What do you mean by rode out?
They rented a rig from the livery and rode out on Picket Post Road to look over land that Mr. Bixby intends to buy.
Picket Post Road? That's not good.
What do you mean that's not good? Is there something about Picket Post Road that I should know?
There have been some Indian trouble along Picket Post.
Oh, God in heaven. Something has happened to her. Them. I just know it.
We're about to go out and take a look. I'll make a special effort to find her.
I'm going with you.
Mr. Hendel, that might not be such a good idea. There's going to be some hard riding ahead of us, and no disrespect intended. The last thing I will need is to have someone slow me on the trail.
Mr. Jensen, I'm quite capable of sitting on a horse, sir.
You have convinced me, Mr. Hendel. I'll be glad to have you come along.
Thank you.
Cynthia mounted the horse they brought for and rode with the Indians back to a small encampment. Riding a horse was not a routine thing for a young woman from the city of New York, but she had taken riding lessons, and it was something that she had always enjoyed. She was thankful for that, because her skill as an equestrian was serving her well now. They reached an Indian encampment consisting of about 15 or so structures. The encampment surprised her, because she thought all the Indians were on large and well-controlled reservations. This small village, if that was what it could properly be called, consisted of no more than a few small, temporary-looking structures.
Oh!
Two of the Indians took her into one of them, where they pushed her down onto the ground and left her alone. For some strange reason, she found being left alone to be more frightening than when she was in the midst of them. She sat there, wondering what was going to happen to her. The shock that had allowed her to take her fate so calmly before was now wearing off, and she felt the fear building. But if, as Del Shea had suggested, it was her lack of fear that had kept her alive before, she knew that she could not give in to the cold terror that was beginning to overtake her. After she sat alone for almost an hour, the Indian, who had identified himself as Del Shea, stepped into the little structure. This was the Indian who had spared Jay's life, the one with whom she had discussed Shakespeare. It was odd that he had actually quoted Shakespeare while knowing nothing about the writer her English teacher had called the Great Bard. Despite the relative youth of the Indian, there was about him an aura of dignity and authority.
What is your white man name?
My name is Cynthia.
Now you have an Indian name.
Yes, Mountain Lion Woman.
Nal Yudi does not approve of your name.
Nal Yudi? Is that the big one?
Yes.
He has become my enemy, hasn't he?
Yes.
Why? I have done nothing to him.
He wants to take you as his woman, but I have forbidden it.
You have forbidden it?
Yes.
Are you a chief, Del Shea?
For some, I am a chief. I am not a chief of the people who stay on the reservation.
If you are a chief, then you can tell me why I am a prisoner.
You are a prisoner because you were not killed. Would you prefer death?
I would prefer to be free. You are a chief. Your people must do what you say. Order them to set me free.
I think for now I must keep you as a prisoner.
But why would you want to keep me prisoner? I am of no value to anyone.
You have value to the white man.
You saw how much value I had to my husband.
Your husband is a coward and a fool.
Do not be so hard on him. He was afraid.
Matt, Ken Hendel, Marshal Gilmore, and Sheriff Williams found Bixby on the road less than 4 miles from Phoenix. He was bruised and his clothes were torn and dirty, the result of his having fallen several times. He had been running and his face was red.
Oh, thank God. You've come to save me. I knew you would.
Where is Cynthia?
It did not escape Matt's notice that Hendel called her by her first name.
Water. Please give me water.
Sheriff Williams handed Bixby his canteen, and Bixby turned it up to his lips.
Mr. Bixby, where is Cynthia?
They took her. The Indians took her.
How'd you get away from them?
The axle broke on the buckboard we had rented, leaving us afoot. The Indians came upon us shortly after that. I fought them. I fought hard, but they captured us. Later, I managed to get away. I tried to save Cynthia as well, but I couldn't, so I figured the best thing to do would be to come back here for help.
That probably was the best thing for you to do. If you had gone back a second time to try and save her, you probably would have gotten yourself killed, maybe her as well.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. I see you brought no conveyance, Hendel. I shall require you to return to that accursed corral and secure another buckboard. But as the first one broke down, I refused to pay another cent for the replacement.
Mr. Bixby, you are within easy walking distance of town. I really feel that I should go with these men to look for Mrs. Bixby.
Nonsense! You're in my employ. Your obligation is to me. Now I am directing you to return to Phoenix, rent a conveyance of some sort, and return for me. If you do not do that, you may consider your employment terminated.
Matt could tell by the expression on Hendel's face that he was about to tell Bixby what he could do with his job.
Ken, if she's still there, we will find her. I promise you, I'll let you know what's going on. Why don't you do as Bixby says?
Very well. Mr. Bixby, I shall be back within the hour.
Leave me your canteen.
Hendel took his canteen and handed it down to him.
Mr. Jensen, I find it odd that you say you will keep Hendel posted instead of me. She's my wife, after all.
Of course I'll keep you posted, Bixby.
It was after dark when Matt and the others returned to Phoenix. Matt went to the hotel, intending to give his report to Bixby and Hendel.
Mr. Jensen!
Matt, who was carrying his .44-40 Winchester in his left hand and his saddlebags across his shoulders, walked over to the front desk.
Hello, Mr. Peters.
Did you find Mrs. Bixby?
No.
Well, that's just too bad.
Just about to give the report to Bixby and Hendel. Do you know if they're in their rooms?
No, sir, they are not. Mr. Hendel told me to tell you when you came back that he and Bixby are taking supper over at the Mason Dory restaurant.
Thanks. I'll just get rid of a few things, wash up a bit, then join them.
Hendel and Bixby were sitting at a table near the back wall. Hendel was drinking a cup of coffee, which was the only thing in front of him. Bixby had a full plate of food, which he was attacking with some gusto. When Hendel saw Matt approaching the table, he got a quick look of apprehension.
Did you find her?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't think you would.
Bixby picked up a knife and started spreading butter on a biscuit.
More than likely, she's dead and buried.
You don't seem terribly troubled by that.
Bixby used the knife as a pointer, pointing to Matt as he spoke.
Who are you to judge me? Don't forget, Jensen, I've seen you in operation. I saw how you killed 3 men in cold blood, and now, because I am too civilized, and I might add controlled, to sit here wailing and gnashing my teeth over the prospect of my wife being killed by wild Indians, you think I am a man with no feelings.
She's not dead.
I mean, when I escaped from them, I knew the chances were...
She's not dead.
Oh, thank God.
How do you know she's not dead?
Because we didn't find her.
If she's dead and buried, you aren't likely to find her.
The Apache don't bury their dead. At least, not in the sense that you think of being buried. They put their dead in natural tombs, caves, depressions in the sides of mountains, then cover them with rocks. But that is an honor that they only do with their own. If they had killed Mrs. Bixby, we would have found her body, just as we found the bodies of Mr. Malcolm and the 6 miners that were killed. The Apaches must have taken them by surprise.
Well, that explains the popping Cynthia said she heard.
Oh, here I was being happy that you did not find Mrs. Bixby's body, while you did find 7 others. That was terribly insensitive of me.
No, it wasn't. It's only natural that you would be concerned more about Mrs. Bixby than the others.
You are sure that Cynthia's still alive?
I'm reasonably sure, yes. If they didn't kill her when they first captured the two of you, then in all probability, she will still be alive.
What will they do with her?
They'll make her their prisoner.
No, you don't understand the question. What will they do with her? Will they...
Are you asking if they will rape her?
Yes.
I doubt it.
Doubt it? But you don't really know, right?
There's a possibility that they could force her into marrying one of the warriors. Maybe even Del Shay himself, since his own wife and children were murdered by whites. That's not the same thing as rape.
I'd like to know what that is if it isn't rape. In your own words, you said she would be forced to marry Del Shay.
The Indians have a very strong sense of honor. We may have a difficult time understanding their sense of honor, given that they have done some terrible things, such as raiding ranches and killing entire families. But forcible rape would not be an honorable thing. Marriage, on the other hand, is honorable, even if it is forced upon the woman.
So you're saying my wife might be forced into a marriage, but it is all right because that would be honorable.
No, I'm not saying it would be all right. I'm just trying to give you a look at their sense of honor. However, I don't think it's anything you need to worry about right now. She was just captured, and they know you're still alive. A forced marriage would not be something they would do right away. Here's that word honor again, but the Indians respect an honorable enemy, and that the fact that you were captured but had the skill and courage to escape will extend over to the way they will treat Mrs. Bixby.
What do we do now?
Nothing more I can do tonight, but tomorrow I'll gather what supplies I need. Then I'm going after her.
I will go with you.
Please. No, I know you mean well, and I don't mean to denigrate whatever contribution you might make, but the more people there are out there beating the brush to find her, the less likely I am to succeed. It'd be like putting a little bell on the collar of a cat, you understand my meaning.
Yes, I understand. I would very much like to go with you, but if you feel the chances are better for finding her if you are alone, then I will gladly stay behind.
You're a good man, Mr. Handel.
I'm going to have some dessert. What about you, Jensen? Could I treat you to dinner? Dessert, perhaps?
No, thank you. I'll need to get some things together tonight if I'm going out after your wife tomorrow.
Shortly after Del Shay left, Cynthia looked around and saw that there was a bed of sorts made from animal hides. She moved over to lie on it, surprised by how soft and comfortable it was. Before she realized it, she had fallen asleep. When she awakened some time later, even before she opened her eyes, she was aware of someone near. When she looked up, she saw an Indian standing over her. She recognized him as one of the ones who had captured her, and also as one of the ones who had helped her to her horse.
You have rested, mountain lion woman?
My real name is Cynthia Bixby.
That is your white man name. But now your real name is mountain lion woman.
Mountain lion woman.
The Indian squatted down to place a wooden bowl and a wooden plate beside her. There was water in the bowl and some sort of meat on the plate.
Eat.
Thank you.
Cynthia reached for the piece of meat, picked it up and raised it to her mouth, then hesitated just before taking a bite. The Indian, realizing that Cynthia was afraid to eat, smiled at her hesitation, then reached for the piece of meat and took a bite.
Eat. You will like it. It is very good. I cooked it myself.
What is your name?
I am called Chandisi. It means broken nose.
Even as he explained the name, he ran his fingers across a nose that Cynthia could see was misshapen.
You speak English very well.
I attended the white man's school when I was a child.
Then you have an education. How wonderful.
I went to the white man's school. I know the capitals of all the states. I know how to add and subtract. But what good is that for someone who has left the reservation to go on the warpath?
Why did you leave the reservation?
I left the reservation because the white men killed my wife and children, and killed Del Shay's wife and children. I left the reservation with Del Shay and the others.
Oh, I am so sorry.
It is all right. You did not know.
What is this thing called, this house?
It is called a wiki-up.
May I look outside?
Yes.
When Cynthia looked outside, she saw no one.
Where did the others go?
They have gone to make medicine.
Medicine? What kind of a medicine do they make?
It is not a medicine. It is simply medicine. It is hard for white people to understand, but it is something the warriors do before they go to battle. A powerful medicine gives them strength and courage.
You are a warrior, but you did not go with them.
No, I did not go.
Why not?
Del Shay asked me to stay here with you.
To keep me from running away?
Yes, and to keep Nayuti away.
With spirits saddled, Matt led him down the street no more than half a block, then tied him off in front of Donovan's general store. Going inside, he stepped up to the long counter that separated the customers from the groceries that were on the shelves.
You Matt Jensen, aren't you?
Yes.
I thought as much. I seen you down at the stage depot when you come in after you shot them stagecoach robbers. What can I do for you, Mr. Jensen?
Need a few things for traveling. Some coffee, bacon, dry beans, flour, lard.
You'd be going out to that $10,000 now, wouldn't you? Yes, sir, I figured you would. Told the missus you'd be doing that.
Matt was surprised by the store owner's comment.
What $10,000 are you talking about?
Why, the $10,000 Jay Peerless Bixby's offering to anyone that can find his wife and bring her back to him. That's what you're doing, ain't it?
No.
You ain't going to look for that woman?
Well, yes, I'm going to look for Mrs. Bixby, all right, but not because of the reward. I didn't know there was such a reward.
You must be the only one in town, don't know. I hear Bixby woke up Elvis Blanton over at the newspaper at 6 o'clock this morning. He told him to print up a bunch of flyers. Then he hired a couple of men to post flyers all over the county. You mean to tell me you ain't seen none of those flyers?
No, I haven't.
Well, walk over there to that table and pick one of them up. He got them things posted on every fence and tree and every store, saloon, and building in Phoenix. All over the county by now.
Matt walked over to the table Donovan had pointed out, then saw a stack of paper about 2 inches high. He took the top page off and looked at it.
Reward. $10,000 cash to be paid to whoever finds Cynthia Bixby and returns her safely. Reward offered by J. Peerless Bixby. Inquire at Phoenix House Hotel in Phoenix.
Taking one of the flyers with him, Matt started back to the hotel, intending to have a few words with Bixby. He didn't have to go all the way back to the hotel, though, because he saw Bixby standing on the front porch of Sykes Hardware, talking to a crowd of men who had gathered in the street in front of the store. Bixby was holding up a piece of paper.
This piece of paper says that I have drawn a draft at the local bank to put $10,000 into an escrow account to be paid to anyone who can locate and return my wife to me.
Mr. $10,000 don't do you no good if you are dead.
What do you mean?
If what I'm hearing is right, then it is more than likely that your wife was took by Delshay. Now, maybe you don't know it, but yesterday, the same day he took your wife, he killed 7 men. He also raided and killed everybody at 2 different ranches. It's a miracle he lets you live, and
He didn't let me live. I escaped.
Well, however it happened, it's a bit of a miracle that you run into him and you're still alive. Now, I don't know whether your wife is still alive or not, but I ain't going out there by myself to look for her, and I don't reckon anyone else will either.
Suppose several of you go together. There's safety in numbers.
Hold on there.
Mr. Jensen, you have something to add?
Bixby, the last thing we need is a lot of people running around out there, getting in the way, spooking Delshay, maybe even pushing him into doing something he hadn't planned to do.
That's just the kind of reaction I would expect from someone like you. It's no secret that you intend to conduct this search on your own because you don't want to share the reward money with anyone.
Bixby, I was going out to look for her before I even knew about the reward, and you know that. What I cannot understand is why you would do something like this to purposely make it more difficult to find your wife.
How dare you accuse me of that, sir? It is precisely because I do want to find her that I am offering a reward so as to involve the greatest number of people possible.
Maybe some of you folks would like to come with me.
Matt recognized the man who issued the invitation.
Pogue Willis. What are you doing here?
Same as you, Jensen. Going after that reward. That is, unless you think you're the only one entitled to it.
Pogue Willis? Is that who you are, mister?
That's right.
Well, now, that changes things a bit. If I'm going to be in a fight, I'd sure like to have someone like you on my side.
I'll go with you, Willis, but I figure we're going to need 4 or 5 others just to be sure.
Hell, why don't we all go and form a posse? I know about the rest of you fellas, but if I'm going up against Delshay, I want as many guns with me as possible.
Oh, I agree. That is, if it's all right with you, Mr. Willis.
Yeah, I think it's fine. All right, man. Get rifles, bullets, and what food you plan to take. We'll meet up here in 1 hour.
Matt shook his head in disgust, then mounted spirit and started out of town.
Mr. Jensen!
Looking toward the sound of the voice, Matt saw Ken Hendel standing just under the overhanging porch of the apothecary.
Mr. Hendel!
I tried to stop him. Mr. Bixby, I mean. I tried to stop him from posting that reward.
Matt twisted in his saddle to look back toward the hardware store. He saw the crowd breaking up. hurrying to get weapons and food to join the impromptu posse.
I swear, Mr. Hendel, if I didn't know better, I'd say that Bixby is purposely making it more difficult for me to find his wife.
I don't know what happened out there, but the truth is, I think Mr. Bixby is trying to take the edge off a feeling of guilt.
Matt watched Bixby step down from the porch of the hardware store and start back toward the hotel.
I hadn't thought about that, but you might be right.
Find her, Matt. Please find her and bring her back safely.
I'll do my best, Ken.
Pogue Willis and Billy Meacham waited in the middle of the street for the other members of the posse to return.
I wonder how many are going to go with us.
Why does it matter?
Well, if there's 8 more that go with us and we find the woman, that will be only $1,000 apiece.
No, that will be $10,000 for us and none for them.
What? How can that be?
You just let me worry about that.
It was now 3 days since Cynthia had been captured, and they had changed the location of their camp 6 times. Every night, just before dark, they would move their encampment, then find a place to spend the night. The next morning, just after sunrise, they would move the encampment again. This, Chandasi explained, was to prevent the white men from discovering where they were. Chandasi was constantly by Cynthia's side, for which she was grateful. She had seen Nalyuti looking at her from time to time, and she knew it was only Chandasi and Del Shea who kept him from claiming her. After 3 days, Cynthia felt a need to change clothes, for she was still wearing the same green dress she had on when she was captured. Since she had taken no clothes with her on what she thought would be no more than a couple of hours' drive into the country, she had nothing to change into, and she feared she was stuck with this situation. To her surprise and delight, Chandasi came to the rescue by bringing her a couple of dresses made from deerskin.
These were the dresses of my wife.
Oh, Chandasi, thank you. They are beautiful.
The dresses were wonderfully soft and prettily decorated with porcupine quills and bright blue beads. There was nothing to wear under the dresses, and at first, Cynthia was keenly aware of that fact. But after a couple more days, she quit thinking about it. Each night, Chandasi helped Cynthia to make a soft bed of stretched skin and fragrant grasses. Then he would leave the wiki up to allow her privacy while she slept. Because they spent so much time together, Cynthia was able to engage him in conversation. She did so for 2 reasons. Because she was genuinely curious, and because she thought it would be good to have a friend in this situation.
Where did you go to school?
I attended the mission school at San Carlos.
Have you ever been off the reservation to live among the whites?
No, I have never done that. I've spent my whole life with my people, mostly on the reservation.
Do you ever wish you could live with white people?
No, I like living with my own people. But there are many things I would like to see.
What would you like to see?
I've read that in the tall buildings of the big cities, there are little rooms that you can step into, and those rooms will rise, taking you to the top of the building.
For a moment, Cynthia had to think of what Chandasi was saying.
Oh, you mean elevators. Yes, the tall buildings in the big cities do have elevators.
And I have read as well that one does not need a candle or a lantern. You can turn a valve and have light, for the gas is piped in.
Yes, that is true. And in some buildings, water is piped in as well.
And is there really a device where one person can speak to another over great distances?
Oh, yes. It is called a telephone.
Have you seen such marvels?
I have them in my home. The gas lights, the running water, and the telephone.
I am puzzled.
What has you puzzled? I hope you are not puzzled about how these marvelous things work, because even though I live with them every day, I do not think I can explain the operation to you.
No, that is not what puzzles me. It is just that, with so many wonderful things for the white man to see and enjoy, why must he come to our land?
Do you think the white man has done nothing good for the Indian?
I can think of no good.
What about your education? You have gotten a wonderful education from the white man.
The white man taught me how to multiply and divide, but not how to skin a rabbit. I've had to skin a rabbit many times. I've never had to multiply and divide.
You said you went to a mission school?
Yes.
Then you must have learned about Christianity. Do you not feel joy from knowing that your soul has been saved?
You are talking about the white man's Jesus God, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Do you believe in him?
Yes.
Good. Good.
Why is this good?
Because it is very important that you believe in the one way to the true God.
There are many paths to the Great Spirit.
No, there is but one path. Our Father in heaven will not welcome you into his kingdom if you do not come to him through the Son of God.
You call him our Father? Does that not mean we are all children of the Great Spirit? Are you not his daughter? Is Delshe not his son? Are earth, wind, fire, and water not his creations?
Cynthia thought hard, trying to remember all of her Sunday school lessons. But no matter how hard she tried, no easy answer came to her.
I cannot answer all of your questions. I can only tell you how things are.
Cynthia hoped that Chandasi would accept her explanation and press the issue no further.